somebody really think that Ryan Lochte was telling the truth about that whole thing?
When was the last time someone put a gun to your head and you went, whatever?
Whatever. Whatever, man. Whatever, possible criminal in a country with one of the world's highest homicide rates. Psh, I'm fine with this.
This
anybody
is totally
who does
normal.
That to his hair, we shouldn't. No one should be trusting at all, ever.
Yeah, that's fair.
Nobody. Why? Who in
Nobody.
The hell?
Yeah.
Thought that that was. Oh yeah. I mean, you know, it seems plausible.
Well, you know.
Jay Mariotti had a scorching take on it.
Yeah, I'm not sure what's more likely, that Brazil's dangerous or Ryan Lochte's an idiot.
PFT commenter on Twitter retweeted Jay Mariotti yesterday, who is still evidently alive, and said Michael Phelps, two DUIs, American hero. Ryan Lochte breaks a soap dispenser, national disgrace. People need to figure out their priorities or some such nonsense. It was Kiz-esque. Almost, in how bad it was.
I mean, you know how bad Mariotti went when Woody Page became the voice of reason on Around the Horn.
Yeah.
After a
By the way,
while, so.
Woody Page. I thought Woody Page was just like retiring. I thought he was just like, all right, I'm done. I've done.
No, dude, he's in Colorado Springs.
Yeah, he's in Colorado Springs now. Yeah. What? And like, Colorado Springs already has the best columnist in the state, and Paul Klee. Why would you reduce yourselves to that?
I don't do it,
Woo.
Man.
Woo. Woo. Anyway. Hi everybody. Hey,
hi.
Welcome in. It's the Purple Dinosaur Podcast from Tyler Mon and Anthony Masterson. I'm Tyler Mon.
And I'm Anthony Masterson. You just did this.
Oh.
God, you just said my name. Why don't you say my name again?
Oh. Say my name when no one is
So let's talk about the Rockies.
Baby,
this
I love you. it's episode number 85.
Wow. 85.
18-5. 18-5. Episode number 85 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast, which, by the way, was the year I was born and was the second year of the existence of the Denver Zephyrs, who changed their name from the Denver Bears in 1984. The Zephyrs in 1985 went 77-65 in the AAA American Association. They had a dude on that team who you may recall his name, because he spent some time in the big leagues with the Montreal Expos, the Philadelphia Phillies, the St. Louis Cardinals, the Pittsburgh Pirates, and the Cincinnati Reds, and the Detroit Tigers. Skeeter Barnes was on that team.
Oh, of course.
Skeeter Barnes.
No, Skeeter.
Old Skeeter Barnes. Lloyd McClendon was on that team. Dave Miley. Paul O'Neill spent 137 games in Denver that year. Tom Runnels, randomly.
Hey.
Tom Runnels. Current Rockies bench coach, Tom Runnels. And Max Venable. The father of Will Venable.
Yeah, Will's dead.
I believe, right? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
You would know better than that.
Wow, Max Venable's full name is William McKinley Venable.
That's interesting.
He's, I guess his parents are big fans of...
Big fans of mountains.
President William McKinley.
Or not anymore, it's Denali now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And that's true. So, hey, episode number 85. Welcome in. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, Tyler.
Oh, God. You're so mean.
Every single time.
We got a good show coming up today.
We do, actually. Great guest
today. We
do have
a very good show coming up today. Our good pal, Doug Maurer of the Asheville Tourists, will join the show. Haven't talked to Doug in quite some time. But we will talk to Doug today. We'll talk to Doug about a lot, including one Brendan Rodgers, the Rockies' top prospect, who is just smoking baseballs all over the place as of late. Brendan Rodgers, over the course of a three-game series against the Columbia Fireflies, the full-season Class A affiliate of the New York Mets, Brendan Rodgers put up 19 total bases. Homered twice last night. We're recording this on Friday the 19th, so he homered twice on Thursday night. Brendan Rodgers has been really, really good. He's MLB Pipeline's number 7 overall prospect. That dude's been really good, so we'll talk a lot with Doug about that. Some other prospects who might be flying a little bit under the radar. We will ask him if, in fact, Peter Lambert is, as Connor Farrell of Purple Rose suggests, three toddlers wearing a trench coat. I'm not sure we got an answer to
stacked
really...
Stacked on top of each other, you should
Yeah. Say. Yeah, stacked on top of each other, trying to get into an R-rated movie. I'm not sure we got an answer that disproves that theory, so I think we're clear to continue on with that theory.
We did find a cool new nickname for
Peter Lambert. Yeah, we did. That's true.
So stay tuned.
That is true. So, yeah, here we are with episode number 85.
58 and 63 are your Colorado Rockies.
Oh, yeah. baseball team.
Yeah, coming off a series win against the first place Washington Nationals. Won the last one 12-10, won the other one 6-2 after a rain shortened outing. They held the Nationals starting staff, which is one of the best starting staffs in the league, to 8 2/3 total innings among those three games, one of which was a rain delay, but the other two were starts by Max Scherzer and Steven Strasburg.
And they chased them both early.
And
they lost one of those games.
Yes, they sure did. So that was a good sign because that was coming off the heels of losing 8 of 9 and 10 of 12. So getting back on the winning track is good because now they have the best team in baseball coming into Coors Field for three games this weekend. The Chicago Cubs start tonight. So it's going to be, as one of our Twitter followers put it last night, home games are 82, 83, and 84 for the Chicago Cubs this year.
I think it's been about 10 years that I decided I would no longer attend Cubs games at Coors Field. I went to opening day, what was that, last year, the home opener against the Cubs?
Yeah, when Fowler went
off. Yeah, I think that was the end of that series when Dex hit the tie-breaking homer in the ninth. And yeah, he had like 1,000 hits that weekend. But I was in the press box, which doesn't count the same as being out with a whole bunch of people that you punch and force to move back to Illinois. I'm actually not only not going to the game, I'm going to flee the city this weekend. I'm going to go to Grand Junction and catch some rookie level games. The Grand Junction Rockies are at home this weekend. I'm going to go over there and watch some baseball that's not the big club against a team that for some reason has more fans in the city than the actual big club.
We know why. It's WGN.
WGN, man.
Yeah.
The Superstation.
Although I feel like that's just our generation's excuse. I don't think anybody else has that same excuse.
Although I think the excuse before us was that although I've heard this for the Cardinals too, but that people could pick up Cubs and Cardinals broadcasts on AM radio at night here.
Right. K-Mox was the big one in St. Louis. They could pick up from like Montreal.
Right. Which ironically, the Rockies are kind of now that in the, I guess before, you know, when people still listen to terrestrial radio, I mean, you could pick up KOA for 1,000 miles.
I could pick up KOA in Powell, Wyoming.
Yeah.
At night.
I could pick it up in Lincoln, Nebraska when I was in college, which is very random too at night. But you know, they hate us over there too. So, so anyway, So Colorado Rockies home this weekend to take on the, ye old Chicago Cubs, and that'll be infuriating. I didn't really know what exactly we should talk about this week because, you know, they've played better the last handful of games, but prior to that, it was a rough couple of weeks. I mean, really, Ryan Spielborg's put it this way on Twitter, somebody else who presumably hates us, that they really haven't been the same team since Trevor Story went down. And that's true, but it's not because of a lack of offensive production that they haven't been the same team. The bullpen was just brutal. And obviously Jim Benneman has figured out a solution to that on Twitter, but I just don't know. I mean, that's the frustrating thing is it's not like they, you know, Trevor Story went down, all of a sudden they're scoring, you know, two or fewer runs per game.
You could tell with the name Jim Benneman's again. I still don't remember the name. You could literally spell it out in front of me, and I couldn't. It wouldn't make any sense to me.
I like Clive Bixby yesterday who said, "Who's Jim Bennigans?"
So here are the numbers for the Rockies with and without Trevor Story this year. So with him in the lineup, they were 50-44, a .532 win percentage, which is very good. Without him, they're 8-19, a .296 win percentage. But you look at the offense, runs per game with Trevor Story, 5.3. Without him, 5.2. Home runs are a little bit down, but it's been the ERA. The ERA is about a run higher without Trevor Story, so it's obviously not Trevor Story's fault. That is a fault of a lot of young pitchers that they have in this rotation and in this bullpen maybe hitting the rookie wall a little bit. Because the OBP as a team is better without Trevor Story in the lineup. The batting average is slightly higher. Slugging's a little bit down, but really, the win-loss record is huge, but it's not necessarily because of Trevor Story. And there are a few guys that we can point to say, well, maybe they have hit that wall. And one of the big guys, the big names there is John Gray. John Gray, over his last three starts, has an ERA of over 13, allowing opponents to hit nearly a .400 batting average. The whip is much over 2. The walks per 9, about 4.5 walks per 9. And this is coming off the heels of his first 19 starts, which is obviously a much greater chunk in the last three. Clearly, it can be used as a small sample size argument, and that's totally fine. But the argument here is that eventually rookies will hit the wall. And we think John Gray has hit this one here because the last three starts, averaging only 4 innings per start. When his first 19, he averaged 6. The ERA was a little under four for his first 19 starts. Opponent average 2.23. The WHIP 1.13. The walks per nine under three. Only thing that has stayed constant for John Gray between his first 19 and his last three are the strikeouts. Strikeouts are almost the exact same. And that comes down to one pitch, in my opinion. Bear with me here. We'll tweet this graph out that I put together after the podcast is finished. But really, a lot of John Gray's effectiveness comes from getting swings and misses. We've talked about that a lot this year, Tyler, that getting a guy who can get a strikeout when he needs it, getting a swing and a miss, especially in Coors Field, is such a huge advantage for a guy, especially in Denver. So looking at Brooks Baseball does a phenomenal job of getting this data all together. You can look at how many swings and misses he has gotten per pitch, per start, per month, year, whatever. You can break it down however you want. So this year, I broke it down from John Gray's whiffs per start by pitch, fastball, change, slider, and curve, from the first 19 to the last three starts. Basically, the fastball whiffs per start, almost the exact same. Changeups, basically the exact same. Curveballs, basically the exact same. First 19 starts, John Gray got an average of seven swings and misses on his slider per start. Over his last three starts, he's got an average of about 2.5. That's a huge swing with a pitch that really is your bread and butter when you cannot get guys to swing and miss on it. And it's not even that they're ripping it around the yard necessarily, but they're fouling it off. They're extending at bats. They're driving up the pitch count. And when John Gray can't put those guys away with his dynamite out pitch, it makes him work a lot harder in different aspects, makes him use pitches like the change and the curveball that maybe aren't necessarily as strong as that slider. Because the fastball is there, though. The velocity hasn't dropped really for John Gray at all. It's just getting the guys to whiff on that big money pitch, on that slider. And we have not seen that over the last few weeks for John Gray.
The thing that I am okay with about this, I had this conversation last night on Radio in Town with Reno Notaro, who is one of our good pals, one of our Twitter followers, and just a guy who cares more about the Rockies than the average Denver sports radio host, which is one thing that I love about Reno, and also is the brother of Tig Notaro, and that makes him even cooler. But Reno had this point, and I think it's a very valid one. He said the thing that he likes to watch is that the Rockies are not afraid to let John Gray get himself out of things. That has been in the past, I think, something that we worried about a little bit was when guys start to struggle, are you going to get lifted in a spot where you don't get to figure out that it's okay on the other side? You know, whatever it is. We've seen a whole lot of starts this year where John Gray's thrown 30 pitches in the first inning and he still managed to work five or six and be effective. Or, you know, he's given up a two-out double down the line that scored a couple of runs and he's able to get that final out and get out of the inning. I like that John Gray is learning these lessons in a year where you can afford to have him learn those lessons. It's not that he's learning these when they're leading the wild card race and they're blowing vital games. 2016, you know, now being past the trade deadline, I think is a little bit more perplexing in its scope because of what the Rockies didn't do, but it still was never a year. It was a year for these lessons. It was a year. And I tweeted this out the night that the Rockies blew that game in the ninth inning against Marlins. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
That first stretch, you know, they scored three in the eighth to take the lead. Yeah. And then all of a sudden, you know, they give up three in the ninth. That was brutal. But what I said that night was, these are the games you blow on the fringes of a wild card race in 2016, so you know how to win them when you're hopefully in a division race in 2017 and beyond.
Yes.
So that's where these steps need to be taken, and that's what I like about this last little stretch for John Gray. Now, that being said, I would really love to see John Gray go out his next turn through and put up, you know, the type of line that he put up in Baltimore where he goes seven innings and gives up a run on five hits. You know, I would be totally fine with that. But you need to go through these things when you're 24 years old and still getting yourself figured out at the major league level. You have to struggle.
And you're right that Walt Weiss has really let John Gray try to get himself out of some of these situations. We saw in Philadelphia, he was in the fifth inning. It was a close game. He got some men on base. They didn't take him out, and he gives up the grand slam to Ryan Howard. We saw in the game against the Nationals this past series when he was spotted a seven-run lead in the first inning, but the Nationals kept clawing back, chipping away. He ended up going only four innings in that game because he threw 96 pitches in four innings. I mean, they're trying to get him to a spot where he can succeed, and they want to let him get through some of these trials and tribulations while this season is going on, like you said, while the team is not necessarily contending, but they're at a point where losing isn't going to be something that we can just accept anymore, or the team can accept anymore. You know,
not go quietly into the night.
We will not vanish without a fight.
We're going to live on.
We're going to survive.
Today, we celebrate our Independence Day. Why did they let us do this podcast?
Because it's free. And no one's letting us do it. We're just doing we're just doing it at the expense of everybody else.
Oh, that is true. That is true. You really all have no investment in this except for your time. And if you're wasting your time on it, you are the only one to blame. So we're not going to apologize.
But no, it's a very good point that they really are trying to let John work out of everything. Yeah. And you'd be worried if there was a sharp drop in velocity or something along those lines. But it's not. He averaged 96.5 miles an hour on his fastball in his last start. It's not the velocity that's the problem. It's been the command and it's been the slider. That has been the issue over the last couple of weeks.
Right. So, you know, the sky's not falling. John Gray is going to be fine. It's just a bummer to watch, you know, when I think it's even more of a bummer to watch when the starting pitching has been so good. And, you know, it's been the bullpen that's been hamstringing things. And the one guy who you want to continue to watch every 5 days just go out there and dominate everyone is John Gray. And he's the one who's kind of kicking around some struggles in the rotation as of right now. Now, Tyler Anderson's last time out wasn't good, but
abbreviated.
Yeah, I don't think we can really blame it all on Tyler Anderson. He gets tossed in the fourth inning of a game that was the dumbest thing on earth for somebody to get ejected for. Tyler Anderson goes out and plunks Michael Franco. And I don't know. Now, the umpire's post game and the home plate umpire that night was Eric Cooper, who was atrocious. He said that there was no conversation that factored in to the ejection. It was simply the hit by pitch. But
which makes even less sense.
Yeah, which makes far less sense. I think, you know, Tyler Anderson hits Franco. Franco starts walking down to first, staring Tyler Anderson down, and Anderson yelled something at him. I think if Eric Cooper says, yeah, I thought he was mouthing off at me, so I tossed him, that's a little bit more understandable than just no. It was just, you know, it was a pitch to the leg in what at that time was a 3-run game. I mean, is it no way
in the fourth
they lost
inning.
In the fourth inning? Yeah, man, I don't know. That was kind of dumb. But Tyler Anderson has been terrific. I mean, that was his first bad start. That's the first time that Tyler Anderson has not pitched at least into the sixth inning. And maybe he would have gotten there. He had only thrown 57 pitches. So I think we kind of throw that one out. You know, like in certain Olympic events, you get to throw out your worst scores. I think we just throw out that start for Tyler.
John Gray's next start will be at Milwaukee on Tuesday.
Okay.
So.
And Tyler Anderson's next start will be tonight.
At Milwaukee. Well, yes.
And then it's tonight, and next then one, yeah. after this one. Yes. Next one. So, I mean, yeah, in Milwaukee, not good, you know, but I am excited to see what Tyler Anderson does against Kyle Hendricks and the Chicago Cubs tonight, because it's obviously a very potent offensive lineup. And it's the type of lineup that Tyler Anderson seems to match up with very well, especially in the way that he, you know, our good pal Mike Petriello had an outstanding story on MLB.com last week as to how and why Tyler Anderson is the leader right now among qualifying major league pitchers in lowest exit velocity.
Basically, Tyler Anderson is Clayton Kershaw.
Yeah, is what they said.
Yeah.
He said, quote, Tyler Anderson is the
Mike
next
Petriello says Tyler Anderson is already better than Clayton Kershaw.
And will be forever.
Yes.
I think.
Yeah. That was a direct quote.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's it.
But it's nice for this weekend. The Rockies will miss both Jake Arrieta and John Lester. They will get Kyle Hendricks, Mike Montgomery in a spot start, and then Jason Hamill, our old pal, on Sunday afternoon. But the other big question for this weekend for the Colorado Rockies is that starter on Saturday facing off against Mike Montgomery. Now, it is still TBD, and that is interesting because today is Friday, and tomorrow is Saturday, and they still do not have a probable starter listed for the Colorado Rockies. Now, there's a guy down in AAA who is supposed to be starting tomorrow.
Simone Castro.
No, it's not Simone Castro.
Oh, okay.
God, you're really bad at guessing games.
Wow. He's not even a starter.
He's not even a starter. What the hell's wrong with you?
Christian Bergman.
There is a guy. His name is Jeff Hoffman. What? He is supposed to be starting for the Isotopes tomorrow. Now, what do you think? it would seem that it would be a very likely explanation. However, there needs to be a move made because Jeff Hoffman is not currently on the 40-man roster, I don't believe.
Right.
So the fact that it's still 24 hours before game time and they don't have a probable starter, that is – it's not gamesmanship. This isn't, you know, some guy trying to hide his starter from Joe Maddon. They just don't know right now.
I would be surprised.
Yeah?
I would be surprised if it was Jeff Hoffman, and I'll tell you why. Jeff Hoffman has not pitched more than 5 innings in a start since June 30th, and I think that's because the Rockies don't want to overwhelm him with a workload in his first full season
what
back to Tommy Johnson.
What is overwhelming about coming up, making your big league debut against one of the best teams that we have seen in the modern era, like at home on a Saturday night? I don't understand what you think.
Never be an overwhelming proposition to a kid who's 23 years old. Not at all. So
coming out his first full season after Tommy John surgery. Like, whatever, dude. Like,
just what? Making it up.
Yeah.
But Jeff Hoffman last year did not come back. So he, if you're not familiar with Jeff Hoffman's story, he had Tommy John surgery in 2014, which caused him to slip in the draft and slip all the way to number 9. In the first round. He looked like he was a potential top overall pick, but hurt his elbow in mid-April of 2014, didn't pitch after that. Had Tommy John surgery in May of 2014. The Blue Jays took him with the 9th overall selection at that spot and then traded him, obviously, to the Rockies as part of the Troy Tulowitzki deal last year. But he did not come back from Tommy John until May 20th of last season with Class A advanced Dunedin in the Blue Jays system. So last year, Jeff Hoffman pitched at 3 different spots, 2 different levels, Class A advanced and then a Double A. And between Dunedin and New Hampshire in the Blue Jays system, and then when he moved over to the Rocky system, made 7 starts for New Britain, he threw 104 total innings. This year he's at 118 and 2/3. He is not, as Anthony noted, on the 40-man roster, so somebody would need to be moved off of that in order for this move to work in the first place. But I think just at this stage, and, you know, I could be wrong. I didn't think the Rockies were going to call up David Dahl. I thought they were going to let him finish the way they let Trevor Story finish last year in AAA, finish healthy, finish strong, get ready to compete for a starting job in 2017. But they called him up, and he's been doing great. So maybe I'm wrong on this. But I think at this stage, Jeff Hoffman, let him get into the offseason, finish up strong, finish up healthy, let him know what it's like to go through a full offseason, new organization that he's now very familiar with after last year, and just get healthy and get right for 2017, where he is, I think, very much going to be in the mix for, you know, your number 3 starting job by next year. But that being said, you know, they've surprised us before. I didn't think Trevor Story was going to be the opening day shortstop. I didn't think David Dahl was going to get called up when he got called up. So maybe that is going to be.
We thought they were going to trade a lot of people at the deadline.
Yeah, that didn't happen. Didn't happen either.
So.
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, what's your – do you feel like that's a distinct possibility?
I find it very odd that they haven't said anything yet. Like, as I mentioned, it's 24 hours before the game time.
Yeah, that is a little weird. Now, I actually not even noticed that, but that is very strange.
Now, unless they want it to be the Chris Russen revenge game against his former team that let him go.
Chris Russen's been good.
Chris Russen's been very good.
Yeah.
But he also did just pitch
out
of the bullpen on, was that Tuesday? 3 innings out of Tuesday. I guess Saturday would be fine if they wanted to throw him out there. But Chris Russen is great as a long man coming in to eat some innings. He is really, really good at that. As a starter, even though he did okay earlier this year as a starter, but his last start came actually on June 8th at the Doyer, where he went 6 shutout innings and outdueled Kenta Maeda. The Rockies actually won that game 1-0.
Yeah, no, he was fantastic in that one.
Then he got hurt.
It was like a good BP round. It was just end on a good one.
But then he got hurt right after that and missed about 2 months. So.
Chris Russen in 7 starts this year, 1-4 record, a 5.08 ERA, in 10 relief appearances, a 2-0 record, and a 2.51 ERA. But yeah, I don't, you know, I don't know. I don't see it happening. Maybe I'm just trying to not get excited.
I mean, you could see what they did with John Gray last year as maybe a useful tool to see what they do with Jeff Hoffman. They brought John Gray up and didn't really give him much of a leash over the last couple of months last season.
Yeah.
And they had him start every 5 days pretty much over the last 2 months last year, but they didn't let him get more than, 75 pitches or whatever it ended up being.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. And John Gray was not coming off of Tommy John surgery, but he was coming off of an injury, sort of. At the end of the 2014 season, he was shut down with some shoulder and elbow fatigue with the AA Tulsa Drillers. So I guess there is some precedent. But, yeah, again, I mean, it would require somebody being moved off of the 40-man roster. At this stage, you know, I'm not sure who that is. The Rockies have a whole lot of old guys on the disabled list. Jason Mott, Chad Qualls.
Yeah. The other four guys who are not hurt pitcher-wise who are on the 40-man roster, Eddie Butler, Miguel Castro, Jason Gurka, and Antonio Senzatella. You got to imagine Castro and Senzatella are not going anywhere.
And I don't think
Eddie Butler's imagine going anywhere. They would DFA Butler just to put Hoffman up on the 40-man roster. Yeah. But Gurka would be the odd man out there, but he's a lefty who's done pretty well in AAA this year. I can't imagine they want to do that either, but you never know.
It doesn't have to be a pitcher either.
True. You know, Rafael Ynoa is still there.
Rafael Ynoa is still hanging around on the 40-man. They made a DFA move in which Brandon Barnes cleared waivers and was accepted his assignment to the AAA Topes. So, you know, I don't – at this stage in the season – I don't think there's anybody that the Rockies are going to DFA who, you know, either A, is going to garner a ton of interest, or B, you're really going to miss that much. I mean, I think Ynoa is the guy. You know, there's nobody that you look at, certainly none of the outfielders that are on the 40-man, Blackman, Dahl, Gonzalez, Parra, Rayburn, and Tapia. None of those guys are going anywhere. None of the four catchers is going anywhere.
MVP Justin Gerardo Parra.
MVP candidate. Newly resurgent MVP candidate, Gerardo Parra. Dustin Garneau, Nick Hundley, Tommy Murphy, and Tony Wolters. I don't think any of those guys are going anywhere. So, you know, maybe it's just wishful thinking that we're trying to rid ourselves of Rafael Ynoa. He's a tough out, though. I mean, if I had to say something about
Or Christian Adames, who has not hit a ball hard, I believe, since 2013.
Poor Christian Adames. I still feel like Christian Adames, given the right situation and a different organization, can be an effective major leaguer. I mean,
Then in Denver? Come on, man.
He's a replacement-level guy. No, I mean, I think getting regular starts and regular at-bats, he could be a serviceable major leaguer. But, you know, I mean, he spent the first 4 months of the season just being a pinch hitter, a guy off the bench and getting a spot start. I don't think that, you know, he's never going to hit 300 and be an all-star, but I think Adames could start in an infield for somebody somewhere. Not here, though.
Nah, pass.
Not here.
Pass. Hard pass.
I think he would, I think he'd benefit from a change of scenery.
He has a 32 OPS plus.
Is that good? Is that not good?
It's not good.
But when he's batted fourth in the lineup, he's 1-for-1 this season.
Super.
With a 2,000 OPS.
He has 6 extra base hits, and I defy you. Besides, I guess he had the home run in Pittsburgh that won that game back in May.
Yeah.
Which is the most ridiculous thing.
For that.
Let's get to Doug Maurer.
Yeah, let's go to Doug Maurer. Doug Maurer is the radio voice of the Asheville Tourists, a Class A full season affiliate of your Colorado Rockies. Brendan Rodgers is there. Peter Lambert is there. Brian Mundell is a guy who maybe you haven't heard of, who's just crushing baseballs all over the place. And Doug Maurer will tell us about all of them and more coming up next. Headed out to the South Atlantic League, where Asheville, North Carolina is where we find our good pal Doug Maurer of the Asheville Tourist, the radio voice who we have somehow not caught up with this season, so we open with an apology, Doug. But welcome back, man. What's going on?
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys. It's been a good season so far, just wrapping up, about 2.5 weeks left, and this team's really starting to come together, and hopefully we'll it'll make a little bit of a playoff push. But no, it's great to be back with you guys, and excited to talk some tourists and some Rockies.
Well, the tourists right now 27-25 in the second half in the South Atlantic League Southern Division. Overall this season, Asheville 61-60. And it seems like every team has an affiliate that year to year is just good. I mean, even if the talent that comes through isn't the top flight talent in the system, the team is just good anyway. And that seems to be the tourists. I mean, what do you think it is about, especially this last, you know, 5 year stretch or so, a couple of Sally League titles in there? What makes this team so consistently a decent team in that league?
Well, I think you have to start with with the players that we've been receiving over the last five, even 10 years. The Rockies have done an excellent job making sure that we receive not only a balanced team, but some top prospects as well. And I think the Rockies like to put some of their prospects here in Asheville because you have some similarities from this ballpark and this environment to what they're going to be seeing in Coors Field. You know, we're up in the mountains, so you're playing half your games at very high elevation. For pitchers, they're going to have to figure out how to pitch in a hitter-friendly ballpark. And so it's certainly a learning experience that I think the Rockies like to have some of their guys go through. Another reason I would put on it is the fans here in Asheville. This is a very baseball-savvy town. They enjoy coming to the ball game. And they're an intelligent crowd. You see a guy puts down a sacrifice bunt. He gets almost a standing ovation as he goes back in the dugout. You bring a runner home from third base with less than two outs. That's a big deal here. The fans take their baseball seriously. I think that sort of helps rub off on the guys. You mix that in with the talent and a lot of the movement throughout the rest of the league. We tend to put together some good seasons, and we're having another good one this year.
Now, I liked one thing you said there, Doug, about how the Rockies aren't afraid to put their top prospects there or really enjoy putting their top prospects there. When mm-hmm. I was with the Potomac Nationals in 2009, they had just drafted Strasburg and then Harper in 2010, and they did not mm-hmm. want any of those guys to go to Potomac because the facilities weren't up to snuff by any means. The field was trash. They would always skip their prospects from Hagerstown or wherever it was at that point to Harrisburg. They would skip high A altogether. Mm-hmm. And that can stunt development sometimes. But I love the fact that you said that the Rockies are not afraid to put their top players there. And that's what we've seen in the past few years with David Dahl going there and Tapia and McMahon, et cetera.
Absolutely. Yeah. You mentioned the facilities, Anthony. This ballpark was built back in 1924. So it could be falling apart, but it's not. We've taken a lot of pride in keeping this ballpark modern as well as still having that historical feel to it. We have the smallest capacity in the league. We can only fit about 4,200 fans in here, and that includes standing room only. But year after year, we're right in the middle of the league in attendance. So you have the history, the fact that the tourists have been affiliated with the Rockies ever since Colorado became a major league franchise. And that partnership has gone a long way. Earlier this year, we announced along with the Rockies, we extended the player development contract for another 2 years through 2018.
Oh, that's excellent.
Held a press conference here. It's really a great partnership. And I think that has a little bit to do with it as well. That the Rockies know that when their players are here in Asheville, they're going to be taken care of well. And they're also, going to be continuing to develop.
That's the longest partnership in the Rockies system. The Asheville Tourists and the Rockies go back to the inception of the franchise, which is really cool. And there could be some movement right above that as we get into this offseason with the PDC with the Modesto Nuts coming to an expiration and the Nuts looking like they're going with the Seattle Mariners. So there's a chance that the Rockies High A affiliate could be in the Carolina League in 2017, which would actually make a lot more geographic sense as far as it goes for prospects going from Asheville to that next step and then to Hartford. But, that's a conversation for down the road. But one of those guys who will be making that move at some point in 2017, maybe he just vaults over high A altogether. The top prospect in the Rocky system is shortstop Brendan Rodgers, the third overall selection in last year's draft. Doug, this is, you can't put it on a kid who's 20 years old to say he's a generational talent, but people talk about Brendan Rodgers the way they talked about Troy Tulowitzki when he was in the system. Just give us what it's been like to be with him so far this season. Rodgers has played in 100 games. His slash line right now is sitting at .288. .353, .491, but in the month of August, he's hitting .353 with a .1061 OPS already. He homered twice last night, and again, we're recording this on Friday morning. Just give us the Brendan Rodgers synopsis so far. What's it been like being around this guy?
It's been fun. It's been real fun, Tyler. Brendan is a guy who came in with a business-like mentality here. He knew that, this was an opportunity for him to really showcase what he can do. He's improved a lot throughout the course of the year as well. The raw power was there in April, but some of the other things that he's been able to improve upon on the field are really starting to come to fruition here in August. I'll give you a couple of examples. One thing that we've seen a lot more from Brendan at the plate is his ability to recognize off-speed pitches. Teams figured out pretty fast, you can't just throw this guy to get me over fastball, especially for strike one. He is up there with a swinger's mentality, loves to go after the first pitch. And you throw him a fastball to try and get him to count, he will burn you. So he's seeing a lot more breaking balls, sliders, curveballs, changeups, a lot of them out of the zone. And that's really the method that opposing pitchers have adopted to try and get him out. And so it worked for a little while, but Brendan has really developed that part of his game. And when he's able to lay off those pitches and work into a hitter-friendly count, then you better make sure you're watching the game and taking a sip of your soda or your beer or something like that, because he can definitely light it up and hit it a long way. But he hits a lot of those off-speed pitches too. He goes the other way into right field. His second home run was a breaking ball yesterday. He put it right over the right center field wall. And he has, I want to say, right around 28 doubles on the year as well. So it's not just the home run power, but he can hit for average. He can hit to all fields. And then another thing on Brendan that I've seen him develop this year is defensively. We've seen him rotate between second and short. Primarily, he's been at short. But his range has really improved. He has tremendous arm strength, really good instincts, and excellent glove skills. He's very good picking the ball, short hops, that sort of thing. But we've seen him make some diving plays recently, sort of some of those plays that you'll see flashes of a couple times during the season. And so that's a big league play. And those are really the indications. I remember when we'd see Trevor Story make that play at shortstop here in 2012, and all of a sudden you think to yourself, that's a big league play. Not everyone can make that play. And so Rogers has doing that. Off the field, Brendan's been great to work with. He's done all kinds of interviews this year, and he's really, done it all with a smile on his face. And he's done a nice job in the clubhouse with the guys too. So it's certainly been nice to have him here, and he's been a big part of our team's success.
And this is Brendan's first full professional season, and so it's not out of the ordinary to see a guy start out hot and then start to tail off a little bit. And we saw Brendan hit 329 in April, went down to 280 in May, but it's still pretty good numbers overall. But then June hit 247, 266 in July. But now he's, as we mentioned, he's back in August hitting over 350. What were some of the adjustments that you saw him make within the season? Because this is really the time of the year when we see young players like Brendan Rodgers start to kind of break down a little bit, maybe hit that rookie wall. What has brought him out of that we saw him in June and July when he struggled a little bit? What's he doing right now that he made the adjustment to change to see what we've been seeing in August?
That's a great question, Anthony. Brendan suffered, a little bit of a setback in June as far as his numbers go. I think that, the All-Star break was, a nice way to sort of get him rest. And I give our coaching staff a lot of credit. He'll DH some games. He'll have a day off every now and then, just keeping or finding ways to keep him fresh. But at the same time, when you're struggling, you want to be in there. You want to find a way to break out of that. So I think a lot of that goes back to what I was talking about earlier with being able to recognize what pitchers are trying to do to him. It is his first full season, but he's also facing the most talented pitchers he's faced in his career. So, these guys, are talented. They're all trying to make it up as well. And they see Brendan Rodgers come to the plate. It's an opportunity for them to showcase what they can do. It's definitely a tough task. I'll tell you another thing that really, I think, has helped Brendan has been the guy hitting behind him, and Brian Mundell, night in and night out. You try and pitch around Brendan Rodgers, you're going to have to face Mundell with a runner on base. And teams don't want to do that very often. So he's seeing some good pitches to hit. And, Brendan is, being able to sort of recognize those different pitches better now than he was in June and July. Because April and May, let's be honest, I mean, he was seeing a lot of strikes. He was seeing a lot of fastballs. Pitchers are trying to get in their rhythm, and he was making them pay. So I think the book got out on him a little bit, but he's done a great job adjusting to that. and you know, really starting to put up some big numbers here in August.
Brendan Rodgers kind of follows the classic parabola, or maybe negative parabola, of a minor leaguer who you really want to see develop. He had 329 in April, 280 in May, 247 in June, and then it starts climbing back up, 266 in July and 353 in August. And the OPS follows that same path, 993, 818, 691, where it bottoms out, then 775 last month and 1061 so far this month. That's what you want to see as far as development goes. But Doug brings up a really interesting prospect in Brian Mandel, who is a first baseman and has DH'd at times this season for the tourists as well. What's crazy about Brian Mandel is, Doug noted before we got started on the interview today, this kid has 50 doubles this season, 5-0 doubles in 120 games. What? That's insane.
I'll tell you what, Tyler, another guy who hit a ton of doubles at this level, right around the same number of home runs that Brian has, was Nolan Arenado when he was here in 2010. Huh. You could just see the power, the talent. Yeah, I think we've heard of that guy a little bit. I see a lot of similarities offensively between those two. Brian is a tremendous hitter. And I'll tell you, every time he comes to the plate, you think he's going to hit the ball hard somewhere. He has an above average eye. He's a patient hitter. But, when he lets it go, he hits it hard. And we've seen teams try and shift him a little bit. You just can't. You can't shift. You don't know what he's going to do with the plate or where he's going to hit the ball. But, this is a guy, he leads the South Atlantic League in hits. He leads the league in runs scored. He leads the league in RBIs. He leads the league in extra base hits. He leads the league in total bases. I mean, you can go on and on and on with Brian Mandel. And he's hitting .320 on the year. Almost 500 at bats. So, this is a guy who he is just a pure hitter. Wasn't this exactly a first baseman in college. So it's not really a new position for him. I think it's a second or third year playing first, but he's fine defensively. Good size, well built. I think the Rockies got an absolute steal with him in the seventh round, and I would fully expect to see him climb the prospect ranks. I think he just cracked the top 30 this year. As far as MLB.com, but this is a great player, and I really like how he and Rodgers have been together here all year. Brian's a college guy; he's a little bit older, but he's sort of been that unsung team leader in the clubhouse. And with Brendan Rodgers, being a high school guy and getting his first taste of full season ball, and being able to do it with a guy like Brian Mandel, those two have been a great 1-2 punch this year.
Yeah, and to your point, the Rockies do like getting Big West players. Brian Mandel went to Cal Poly. Of course, we know all their history with Long Beach State. But Brian Mandel, 50 doubles. Trevor Story in 2012, 43 doubles with the Asheville Tourists. Nolan Arenado in 92 games had 41 doubles back in 2010 for the Tourists. So, yeah, those are pretty good comparisons. You want to throw that out there. Let's go to the mound right now. A guy that we heard of a lot last year because he was involved in a very large trade, the Troy Tulowitzki deal, Jesus Tinoco. He came over as the third prospect that came up from Toronto, came down to South Atlantic League last year, did really, really well, was promoted to Modesto, struggled a lot, got injured. Now he's back with Asheville. The numbers are not great as what we've seen. We saw him do last year in the South Atlantic League. Tell us about Jesus Tinoco, what he's working on, and what we could expect to see from him over the last couple of weeks or so.
Jesus has really been an interesting story, at least in my opinion, this year. And he was as dominant as they come last year. No one could touch this guy in the South Atlantic League. And when he came back this year from Modesto, it seemed to me like he was almost just pitching to pitch. He wasn't necessarily pitching to get guys out, if that makes a lot of sense. I'll give you an example. He'd jump ahead of a guy 0-2 and he'd throw him a fastball that caught a ton of plate, as opposed to maybe a setup pitch or trying to, induce some weak contact. And he's been hit hard. But that being said, Tinoco, it seems to me like he's turned the corner. His last start, he threw tremendous. He ended up going 5 2/3. He only gave up one earned run. He gave up four runs, but he was actually out there really pitching. He's gone to his breaking ball a little bit more. And when he's able to throw that for strikes, it sets up the fastball, and then he induces the weak contact. So I think that's really what the tourist pitching coach, Mark Brewer, and some of the Rockies pitching instructors are trying to get with Jesus. You know, I like what I see. You can absolutely see the talent with this guy. It's just not throwing the ball down the middle that he needed to work on this year. And I think he's done better. You know, his last couple of starts have been good. That ERA continues to come down and come down. As far as in the future for Tinoco, I think that, you know, if he can regain that form he had last year, the sky's the limit for this guy. And we saw it, so we know that he has it in him. And for this year, you know, with Jesus, I think it's a little bit mental. Just try and get some of that confidence back. And you know, he picks up a couple of wins. And then all of a sudden, going into the off season, he has some confidence. He can work on a couple mechanical things. But I think, you know, it's very important mentally for Tinoco. We had a game in Hagerstown. I know you're familiar with the Nationals organization, Anthony.
Yes.
And, you know, Hagerstown is tremendous this year. They're very good. And we threw Jesus Tinoco out there. He was in a bit of a rough stretch. And he pitched a big game, but he recorded big outs. You know, guy at third base with two outs in a one-run ball game, and he picks up a strikeout to end the inning. You know, runners at first and second with one out, he induces a double play ball. So just being able to pick up, you know, big momentum-boosting outs have helped him sort of gain confidence. And we saw it his last start here. He was great. He'll start again for us in a couple of days against the Rome Braves. So I'm excited to see that outing.
Jesus Tinoco, one of the young guys that the Rockies would really love to see take a big step forward, and somebody who has kind of done that this year and flies, I think, a little bit under the radar comparatively to so many of these other top prospects in the system is last year's second-round pick, Peter Lambert, who, as the joke goes on Purple Row, may actually just be three toddlers in a trench coat because he looks like he's 7 years old. So far this season, Peter Lambert, who's taken out of San Dimas High School in California, 5-8 record of 4.24 ERA, but he's put together some really, really good stretches, especially, I mean, the first 3 months of the season. When he exited the month of June, the ERA was at 2.38. He had put together some really, really good runs and is a guy who, you know, has a lot of time to develop, Doug. He's 19 years old. The curveball is a really, really good pitch. The fastball is a really good pitch above major league average, according to the MLB Pipeline scouting report. What have you seen from Peter Lambert this year? What makes him effective when he's good?
Oh, Peter, the baby-faced assassin, you like to call him here at Asheville. He is a bulldog on the mound. He doesn't look like it, but if he is out there on the mound, he is coming at you with everything he has. Great mentality from Lambert. And, you know, you mentioned the ERA coming out of June. The Rockies, and rightfully so, very careful with Peter. He didn't pitch more than five innings in a single start in the month of June. And there were plenty of outings where he had a lot left in the tank and probably puts up, you know, seven or eight innings of zeros as opposed to five innings. So that ERA, I don't put too much stock into that. It's a little bit over four now, but Lambert's had some starts where he could have easily, you know, pitched seven, eight innings and that ERA would have been a little bit lower. As far as the stuff from Peter, you talked about it, great fastball, tremendous command, throws it in the mid 90s. He's really been using it a lot lately. His downfall, I don't really want to say his downfall, but he had a couple of rough starts after the All-Star break. I think he went away from his fastball too much. He used some secondary pitches, which are good. You know, he has the changeup, he has a slider, and he has a really good curveball. But you know, when he went to those pitches and then tried to go back to the fastball, the command wasn't necessarily there. So what we've seen from Peter over his last few starts, he's really used that fastball early. He establishes the strike zone. And then he puts the hitters off balance with his off-speed stuff. Really good changeup, tremendous curveball. And I like how Peter uses his curveball, too. He doesn't throw it a ton, maybe, you know, in between three and five times per outing. He'll drop it in there when he needs a strike, when he wants a big strikeout. And that's usually a pitch that'll do the trick. As far as, you know, Lambert off the field in the clubhouse, great guy. You can tell that, you know, the guys really take to him. He has not missed a single start all year. Every fifth day he's going out there. And now that we're in the second half of the season, getting down the stretch, you know, the innings limit has gone up a little bit. He's pitched six innings a few times. And it's one of those things where when he takes the mound, it feels like the tourists have a great chance to win. So I think Peter is certainly going to be good if he continues to develop, and he is every bit ranked where he should be as far as prospects status goes and the stuff that he has, when he is in rhythm, he is pretty much unhittable. And you can see it in his eyes out there on the mound. He will get the baseball back from the catcher and go right into the windup for the next pitch. He is in control when he's on the mound. And you just don't realize it when you look at him because he does look so young, but excellent makeup with this kid.
Hey, Doug, there's one more pitcher I want to ask about. A guy who hasn't pitched since the end of June, and that's David Hill. David Hill was a fourth-round pick of the Rockies out of the University of San Diego. I actually called his first year when he was a freshman at Long Beach State a really intriguing arm. Then he transferred to USD. And he was a guy who made some headlines in last year, his last couple years at USD, by throwing 140, 150 pitches in a game. His coach would just kind of wear him out and let him throw as many pitches as it possibly took to get him to complete a game. And at some point, yes, it's a great mentality to have that you want to finish what you begin. But, you know, you could see from, you know, the number of pitches he would throw, there might not be a lot of health in his future. Started out the year, mm-hmm. did pretty well, got till the end of June. Had about a strikeout per inning, didn't walk anybody, but then he's been on the shelf since the end of June. Now, I want to know, did you notice when David Hill got to Asheville, if it seemed like there was already a lot of wear and tear on his arm, or really if it was just, you know, I guess I want to see what you think mm-hmm. of a guy who gets a lot of the pitches thrown in college and then gets to the professional ranks, and then if it might have affected him getting on the DL at the end of June there.
Yeah, it very well may have, Anthony. That's a great point. You know, I'll say this about Hill. He was our opening day starter. He was expected to be the ace on this staff, and he did a great job. We had a couple of other pitchers who did very well for us in the starting rotation at the beginning of the year, guys like Jack Weinkoop and Parker French, who both earned some midseason promotions. The starting pitching overall, you have those three guys, Peter Lambert, Trey Killian, who picked up his 10th win of the year yesterday. That's a pretty good five-man rotation. Now it's just Lambert and Killian left here. But as far as David Hill goes, the stuff looked great to me. You could tell that he didn't throw a straight ball. The ball moved, so he wasn't squared up a whole lot. Had the strikeout stuff, like you said, Anthony, about one per inning. You know, I try not to delve too deep into injuries. I know that he has been on the disabled list and he's not going to pitch for us again this year. But, he's a guy who it's possible that, you know, that wear and tear in college might have had something to do with it. Like I said, I'm not too schooled in the injury sense as far as, pitch count monitoring and, rehab situations, that type of stuff. So I'm not 100% sure what the Rockies' plan for him is going into next year, but I do know they like his stuff. I know he's very talented, and he's a guy who they're certainly going to, give every opportunity to prove himself to continue to climb up the minor league ranks and the minor league ladder. And I will say this, talent-wise, he's every bit deserving to be in this league and probably higher up right now. So depending on how he comes back from this injury. And by the way, it sounds like, Anthony, I mean, this may actually be a good thing for David. Give him a little bit of time
absolutely.
Off and give him a couple of months. So, hopefully he'll come back fresh next year and continue to show some of those skills we saw in college and then here at the first few months of this season.
We were hoping for a real medical diagnosis from you, Doug. I mean, what do you want to know? We'll get your
Doug Maurer, MD.
Here. Yeah.
Now, I've been doing this. I've been doing this a few years now. I don't go too deep into the whole injury sense, I'll point out some positives, and we saw plenty of them from David this year.
Beautiful.
Doug Maurer is the radio voice of the Asheville Tourists, who, they got Brendan Rodgers, they got, Brian Mundell setting a minor league record for Rockies prospects, hitting 50 doubles of his 151 hits this season. They got Peter Lambert, they got Jesus Tinoco. It's a ton of fun. And, by the way, tonight they have both dollar hot dogs and fireworks because minor league baseball is the best. If you find yourself in Asheville in the coming weeks, Tourists will be home. They're taking on the Rome Braves this weekend, back home for the final homestand of the season against the Hickory Crawdads and those pesky Hagerstown Suns coming up the final few days of August and into September. And then that's it. Then you're done, Doug. Maybe.
That's it.
Unless they make
it.
A run.
2.5 weeks. Yeah. Maybe. We've won 3 in a row.
Yeah.
Crazier things have happened. Yeah, it's definitely possible. We could use a little help with Augusta going down. But I'll say this, finishing off with Hagerstown, that's going to be tough. That is a really good team this year. They've got some good prospects that have gone through that system this year. And, we actually had a chance to face Lucas Giolito earlier this year.
That's right.
Who was one of the top prospects and all. And I'll say this, just sort of wrapping up on Brendan Rodgers, he hit a ball off Giolito that still might not have landed yet. That's the kind of power that this guy has. So, Rockies fans should feel good about him.
Yeah, that was a very strange little thing. Giolito had come out of the All-Star break and didn't really have anywhere. It was his start day, didn't have anywhere to go because I think Double-A Harrisburg was on their All-Star break. So the Nationals are like, man, why don't we just send him to Hagerstown? So here's Lucas Giolito. At that time, the consensus top prospect in baseball, pitching in full season Class A against guys, very much his junior, both in age and in skill level, and Brendan Rodgers tattoos one off of him. And that's always, again, minor league baseball is the best, man. It's the greatest.
It's great. Absolutely great. Yeah. And be able to see those guys. Brendan crushed one. Mundell hit a home run off of him. Those are confidence boosters for these guys. So, we have some fun, and we're certainly going to have some fun over these last 2.5 weeks.
So keep an eye on the tourists and tune in to Doug. You can catch him all season long at MILB.com as well. One of our favorite dudes in the organization. And Doug, we can't thank you enough for on such short notice giving us a little part of your morning, I guess early afternoon there now. And we'll do it again soon.
No, my pleasure. Anthony, Tyler, thank you. Thank you guys for having me.
Big thanks to Doug Maurer, who
he's so great, man.
He is on Twitter, by the way. I think Doug is held out from Twitter, and I envy that so much about Doug. Twitter has ruined my life in so many ways.
Yeah. Twitter's by far the worst thing that's ever been
invented. I'm still there. Yeah, it's awful. It's awful. But I'm there every night engaging with all you morons, talking about a terrible baseball team that
morans.
Is miserable.
Get a brain,
all morans. All you Colin morans.
No, he's literally just talking about me, guys. He's not talking about you. You guys are
talking
great.
About Anthony. Yeah, you guys are great. It's just it's a thinly veiled attack on Anthony. But you can follow the Asheville Tourists on Twitter. They're at GoTourists. And yeah, if you're ever, as Anthony can attest, if you're ever in Asheville, go see a tourist game.
McCormick Field is one of my favorite parks in the
awesome.
Country.
Yeah. It is awesome.
And Asheville is one of my favorite cities in the country.
Yeah.
So
yeah. No,
if you can check out Asheville at some point, go in the summer, see a tourist game. It is well worth your while.
It is all worth the hype. We touched on this very briefly, and we're going to touch on it very briefly again because Anthony's got to get running. I got to get running. But the Colorado Rockies are in an interesting spot as it pertains to their minor league alignment for the 2017 season. Here's the situation. The Modesto Nuts, the player development contract, which teams usually sign.
Modesto Nuts. John Thurman Field is the place for family fun.
The player development contract with the Modesto Nuts expires at the end of 2016. Teams usually ink those in 2 or 4 year increments. It does not look like the Rockies will be back in Modesto, which really sucks. They've been an affiliate with the Nuts for a long time. And just from a name and logo and uniform standpoint, I'm very bummed about that.
Yeah.
But on a larger scale, it looks like there are big changes afoot in the California League. Here is what appears to be the case. The Houston Astros want to build a ballpark in Fayetteville, North Carolina, and place a Class A advanced team in the Carolina League in that city. Fayetteville City Council voted 10-0 on Wednesday night to accept a memorandum of understanding to build a ballpark for that franchise, which calls for a stadium to be completed by 2019 and includes a 30-year lease. It appears the tenant of that stadium will be the Houston Astros and a High A affiliate. Now, the Astros are currently affiliated with the Lancaster Jethawks in the California League, who are one of the more successful teams in that league.
Right.
There are teams in that league that are very much on the opposite end of that spectrum. The High Desert Mavericks really stand out on that list. We talked about that a little bit. They were sued by the city in which they played before the season to try to prevent them from staying in the ballpark because the lease of that ballpark is a disaster. The Bakersfield Blaze have long struggled.
Great Twitter account. Home. Not a great facility.
Account. Great fan of ours and vice versa.
And Bobby DeMuro.
Bobby. So yeah. We're fans of that as well. But Bakersfield Sam Lynn Ballpark is has long been one of the more lowly regarded facilities in minor league baseball. So it looks like right now, High Desert and Bakersfield will lose their teams, and those teams will shift to the California or to the Carolina League. So it'll be a contraction of the California League to 8 teams and an expansion of the Carolina League to 10 teams. Anthony and I both being former Carolina League radio guys, that seems crazy. But Fayetteville and our favorite place in the Carolina League, which has not been in the Carolina League for 6 years now, Kinston, North Carolina.
Yep.
5 years. Kinston will get a new club which would be the high A affiliate of the Texas Rangers.
Granger Stadium needs a team.
Is way too good to not be in the league. So it looks like Fayetteville and Kinston will join the Carolina League. High Desert and Bakersfield will be out of the California League. Now, what does that mean for the Rockies? There was some discussion from a baseball columnist who wears a cowboy hat 24 hours a day that the Rockies would go to Lancaster, and then in a subsequent paragraph of the same blog post, he said Lancaster would not be in the California League, so take that for what it's worth. Here's my projection. I think the Rockies are going to push really hard to get into the Carolina League because Asheville is a step below, and it's one state away of wherever you end up if you are, well, maybe not even one state away. It could be in the same state as the Rockies end up in a place like Zebulon, North Carolina, home of the Carolina Mudcats. And Hartford, your AA affiliate, is just a couple hours flight away. It removes a big hurdle in transferring prospects from low A to high A to double A, which right now are going from Asheville to Modesto, California to Hartford. I think the Rockies would be very well served again in the Carolina League. Carolina, the team in Zebulon, the Carolina Mudcats, appear to be the only situation where that could work. The Myrtle Beach Pelicans are affiliated with the Chicago Cubs. They love that affiliation. I would presume they'll re-up there. The Potomac Nationals and the Washington Nationals, a longtime partnership there. I would assume that's as good as gold. And the Wilmington Blue Rocks, who were actually for a long time, it was rumored that they would move to the AA Eastern League. Wilmington is sticking around in the Carolina League, but they've been an affiliate of the Kansas City Royals for a long time. I would assume that'll continue. That leaves Carolina. If the Rockies were able to get in there, great ballpark, a good situation for your minor league footprint, I think that would make a ton of sense. The Braves are currently the parent club of that team. The Braves have been in the Carolina League for a very long time. I don't think that they would want to leave. They certainly wouldn't want to go to California. But if the Rockies somehow were able to strike a deal there, I think that'd be really interesting.
Oh, and the Rockies have been in the Carolina League before. They know it very well. From 95 to 2002, they were the Salem Avalanche out of Salem, Virginia. Now they're the Salem Red Sox. So they know the league well. It was kind of the genesis of their team and their organization. They know what the Carolina League is all about. It's a great, great league for them to be in. I think it would do a lot of good for that team if they want to be an East Coast franchise until you get good enough to be a AAA player, then come out west and learn the ropes. I don't know. I think it'd be good.
Pretty cool. So just keep an eye on that. The affiliation shuffle starts in earnest next month when teams will start announcing where they're headed for 2017. There are a ton of affiliations that are up. Of the 10-team California League right now, 7 of those PDCs expire at the end of the year. The Rockies do not have an expiring affiliation anywhere else in the system, though, so that's a good thing, and it gives you kind of some continuity, as you heard Keaton say a minute ago. Keaton's with the Modesto Nuts. As you heard Doug say a minute ago, the Asheville Tourists re-upped with the Rockies through 2018, so they're all set there. They're all set in Albuquerque. They're all set in Hartford. Grand Junction, they own that franchise, so that team isn't going anywhere, and Boise as well. The Boise Hawks, that team, Witt's player development contract will not expire for 2018. For the Rockies. So everybody is set aside from this high A affiliate. So keep that in the center of your focus as the 2016 minor league season wraps up. And speaking of wrapping up, I guess we're going to wrap up.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. Buy our shirts. Purple Dinosaur Podcast, bigcartel.com. Get in touch with the show, Purple Dinosaur Podcast at gmail.com and at Purple Dino Cast on Twitter. Anthony's a Master Tones. I'm a Tyler Mon. That's it, I guess.
Do it.
Bye.
Bye.